KFNX News Talk Radio 1100 presents The Charles Goyette Show. To be a part of the program, call 602-277-KFNX. That's 602-277-5369. And now filling in for America's most independent talk show host from Anti-War Radio at antiwar.com, here's Scott Horton.
Good morning, everybody in Phoenix, Arizona. From Austin, Texas, I am Scott Horton from antiwar.com, filling in for Charles Goyette, the most independent talk show host in America, here on the Charles Goyette Show, 1100 AM KFNX News Talk Radio in Phoenix, Arizona. And we're talking about today's top story, Lindsay something or other TV star's drinking problem. Oh, wait, no, we're not. We're talking about the case against, the case for war with Iran. And before I let Gareth Porter off the line here, I appreciate you staying over, Gareth. I have a couple things I want to wrap up with you real quick before we go to the phones and then to antiwar.com's Justin Raimondo. Very quickly, Gareth Porter, tell me whether it is a fact that every time the vice president's office leaks some rumors about Iran arming and equipping the Taliban fighters in Afghanistan who are killing our guys in that country, is it true or is it false that every time that happens, someone from the military comes out and says, no, 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 that's not really true?
Military in Afghanistan is concerned because they are, of course, in the front line, and they know that the threat that they face is not from Iran or Iran, Iran's proxies or allies. It's from the allies of the Pakistanis, that is to say the pro-Taliban forces in the border provinces of Pakistan. So they don't appreciate the effort to really detract from the threat that they face by talking about a completely fictional threat from Iranian assistance to the Taliban, because that's simply, they know that's not true. I must say, however, that the U.S. command in Baghdad is a different story. As we now see, there are very close ties between that command and the White House. They're really one political team, so that the U.S. command in Baghdad is really, you know, part of the game plan of the Bush administration and the vice president all the way.
Okay. So there's another one debunked. And now let's move on real quick here to the peace offer of 2003. I think you've done the most and the best reporting about this. The Iranians in 2003, I believe shortly after the American invasion of Iraq, sent the Swiss ambassador to the United States to deliver a message saying that they wanted to offer, basically put everything on the table and try to restore full relations with the United States. Is that right?
Well, that's right. I mean, they were after what they called the grand bargain, what has been called the grand bargain, which means that all of the issues that divide the U.S. and Iran should be on the table and find a way to satisfy the basic legitimate interests of both sides, which could involve definitely some kind of agreement with Israel to offer ultimate recognition to Israel on the same terms that the Arab states have offered it, which was an explicit part of that deal.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, my point about this right now, because, of course, U.S. and Iran representatives, diplomats, are now talking today in Baghdad about the situation in Iraq, is that Iran clearly is still just as interested in reaching a grand bargain as they were then. They're interested in it because they want legitimacy, they want their security interests and their political interests in the region recognized, and they need the United States to do that. Now, of course, they're concerned about policies by the United States, and they want change in those policies, and that's why they want to negotiate with the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And
they even offered to rein in Hamas in the West Bank and Gaza, and rein in Hezbollah in Lebanon, put their nuclear program on the table, help us fight al-Qaeda. What else?
All of those things are on the table as part of a deal in which the United States agrees to stop its aggressive policies toward Iran and towards other parts of the Middle East.
Yep. Okay, now, real quick, Dave, if I can get you to play this clip, Gareth, listen to this clip of Norman Podhoretz, Rudy Giuliani's new senior foreign policy advisor.
Well, if we were to bomb the Iranians, as I hope and pray we will, that will unleash a wave of anti-Americanism all over the world that will make the anti-Americanism we've experienced so far look like a love fest. On the other hand, excuse me, that's a worst-case scenario.
Yeah, that's the worst-case scenario. What do you think? There's the war party. Norman Podhoretz hopes and prays America will bomb Iran, and yet freely admits that the likely consequences for the United States of America would be an absolute disaster, one that he says would make our current situation in terms of anti-Americanism around the world look like a love fest.
Well, my view is that Norman Podhoretz represents a very unfortunate and very sad phenomenon, which is a kind of death wish on the part of certain very extreme right-wing people who are in favor of war. I mean, it's really, you know, they sort of say, bring it on, bring on death. You know, that's what we want. And I think it's a very sad commentary on this country that they still are listened to.
Now, William S. Lind, a military strategist, wrote an article for the American Conservative magazine called How to Lose an Army. And it, basically the subheadline was Surge and Dig into Iraq and Then Bomb Iran. And his point was, and he quotes in there Muqtada al-Sadr, the leader of the Mahdi army, who we know are the nationalists and least tied to Iran of the Shiite factions. And also he quotes Abdulaziz Hakim as saying, in the event of an American war against Iran, quote, we would do our duty. Does that sound to you, Gareth Porter, like if America bombs Iran, that our soldiers in Iraq are basically a couple of 100,000 Iranian hostages?
Of course they are. You know, we have to recognize the fundamental reality in Iraq is that the Shiite majority and its political military leadership are inherently allied with Iran. They are inherently allied with Iran. When the chips are down, when Shiite interests are at stake, and they do regard Iran as a Shiite country and as fundamentally an ally religiously of the Shiite faith in Iraq, they will side with Iran. There's no question about that.
Yeah, there's some very real consequences that our guys might face. All right, I have to move on from here. Thank you very much. Gareth Porter, everyone, from IPS News, and he writes for the American Prospect. You can find him at antiwar.com/Porter. Thanks again, Gareth.
Always a pleasure.
Okay, folks, real quick, couple of phone calls. Stuart, what you got?
Good morning, Scott.
Good morning.
Yes, hey, I'd like to bring up a couple of points.
Okay,
one
very
is UN Security Council Resolution 487, passed in 1981. It was passed unanimously. It has concerning about Israel bombing Iraq's nuclear power plant.
Mm-hmm.
And it covers quite a few points about the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, the right to develop nuclear power, a violation by Israel of the UN Charter where they used violence or threatening to use violence. It told Israel to turn over their nuclear facilities to the IAEA and to compensate Iraq for the damage that they did. And that was in 1981. Why is it that we seem to be able to go to war against every other country that violates the UN Security Council resolutions, but Israel gets a free pass?
Well, and that's because the United Nations is a wholly illegitimate organization that exists to be a fig leaf for American imperialism under the guise of international law, and it doesn't apply to us any more than it applies to Israel, or any more, frankly, than I think it should apply to anyone else. I don't see the United Nations as having jurisdiction to force a state to join a treaty that they don't want to, etc. However, your point is well taken.
Yep.
You know, obviously, America and Israel are above the so-called law, such as it is. And now, I'm sorry, I think, Richard, you're going to have to hang on till the next segment, or maybe a little after that, maybe call back in the last segment of the show, because coming up is Justin Raimondo. He is the editorial director of antiwar.com and the author of Reclaiming the Right, the Lost Legacy of the Conservative Movement. And we're going to wrap up today our case against the case for war with Iran, talking with Justin Raimondo about the neoconservatives and the leadership of the war party in this country, who they are and what their motivations are. So stay tuned, everybody. It's the Charles Goyette Show on KFNX, News Radio 1100 in Phoenix, Arizona. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Charles Goyette Show on 1100 KFNX News Talk Radio in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm Scott Horton from antiwar.com, lucky enough to be filling in for Charles Goyette this morning. I hope he's still asleep. It's still only 8 o'clock, you guys' time. Big thanks to Dave Lucas and Chet Reynolds for putting this show together today. They deserve a lot of credit, and I really appreciate both of you guys a lot. And for that matter, everybody at KFNX for helping make this possible. If you're just tuning in, basically the story is I'm sitting up here doing my very best to build the case against the case for war against Iran. And really, I think we've covered all the bases so far. They don't have nuclear weapons, says Dr. Gordon Prather, the nuclear physicist, and all of their nuclear facilities are safeguarded by the International Atomic Energy Agency as they continue to live up to and beyond, in fact, even their obligations under the Non-Proliferation Treaty. Juan Cole, who speaks and reads and writes Farsi, explained that, no, in fact, Ahmadinejad never did say that he was going to wipe Israel off the map. In fact, when you translate his speech, it was an entirely different point that was being made altogether. Philip Giraldi, former CIA counterterrorism officer, made the case that Iran is, in fact, an enemy of al-Qaeda, that they tried to help us fight our war against al-Qaeda back in 2001. And they're, in fact, holding al-Qaeda members in prison right now as al-Qaeda in Iraq threatens war against Tehran. So much for that lie. Then we also discussed with Philip Giraldi the threat that America would actually use nuclear weapons against Iran, which has none, in order to get their underground facilities and in order to threaten them that they better not try to fight back against us once the bombing begins. And it was Philip Giraldi who originally broke that story 2 years ago in the American Conservative magazine. It's been covered by Seymour Hersh and others since then. We talked with Robert Dreyfus about how America and Iran backed the same factions in Iraq. Yeah, it turns out no one in Iraq wants an American occupation except the Iran factions, because they need us. Otherwise, they would be chased back to Iran, probably quite violently. And so America, of course, has chosen to back these Iran factions because they're the only ones who want us to stay. And so civil war be damned. That's just fine as long as we can continue our occupation of Iraq, apparently. And then Gareth Porter helped debunk the lies that Iran is behind the violence against American soldiers in Iraq, which we all know is 99% done by the Sunni insurgency, which is not backed by Iran. And those are the guys who are killing our guys, occupying their country. And the people that Iran backs are our friends. And furthermore, they found factories in Iraq that make the new and improved EFP landmines that supposedly must come from Iran. And so we debunked that and even discussed with Gareth Porter how this stovepipe works, where Dick Cheney sends a general who literally worked for him in the White House, General Bergner, sends him to the Middle East to give this press conference full of vague accusations against Iran to Michael Gordon, the worst reporter in America at the New York Times. And then Michael Gordon publishes it on the front page of the New York Times, and then Joe Lieberman uses that story. Can you keep up here? And then Joe Lieberman uses that story to get the United States Senate to pass a resolution condemning Iran for being behind the deaths of American soldiers in Iraq. And it doesn't matter that it's not true. It only matters that the Democrats now, virtually unanimously, again, the vote in the Imperial Senate was 97-0, have agreed and accepted Dick Cheney's premise that it's Iran's fault that Americans are dying in Iraq, even though that could not be further from the truth. And so if the bombing is to begin at any time in the next year and a half or so before these people finally lose their power, Dick Cheney and George Bush will be able to say with a straight face, because it's absolutely true, that, look, even the New York Times and Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama agree that we have a serious problem here, that Iran is killing Americans in Iraq. As Joe Lieberman said, they've already declared war against us. What are we waiting for? Of course, all based on lies. So that's where we stand so far. And we're trying to get Justin Raimondo from antiwar.com on the phone here to discuss the neocons and what this is all about. But while we're waiting on that, I think we should go ahead and go to the phones. I think Richard is first. Richard?
Yeah, good morning. This imperialistic retired Marine Master Sergeant USMC reporting as ordered, sir. I'm sure the troops would really relish being called imperialists when they're trying to save the bacon of gutless Americans back here, bad-mouthing America. You know,
yeah,
I've heard
well,
nothing but negative stuff. How about positive stuff like Al-Qaeda? Iraqi Al-Qaeda is throwing down their guns right now, coming over to our side because they see what's happening to Iraq. I don't hear anything about that, the positive stuff that's coming out of this.
Right. That's a real positive development, America joining forces with Al-Qaeda against Iran.
Yeah,
and it doesn't matter that Al-Qaeda are the ones who attacked us on September 11th and killed 3,000 people, and that Iran has never attacked the United States of America. No, we ought to go ahead, just like you suggest, Richard, we ought to go ahead and team up with our enemies, Al-Qaeda, against Iran, which is not really our enemy at all. Great point. And, of course, according to Seymour Hersh, in his article in the New Yorker called The Redirection, which came out in February.
Hey, do you realize the same thing happened in World War II when Germans threw down their weapons
in Lebanon,
and they came over and helped Americans?
What? Yeah, anyway, Richard,
America people
is backing
from the
Al-Qaeda right now.
Don't you think people from the other side come over and help America like the Germans did?
I don't know what you're talking about.
See,
who's coming
because
over
you
to
don't
America
know the history of America fighting for our freedom. That's why you think that this whole world is wrapped around in this war. You do not recognize it. When you badmouth America, the enemy hears that, and that gives him the ammunition to continue on the fight.
Okay, well, you know, if America wasn't an invading, imperial, occupying power, then
there you go again, imperial occupying
side.
Power. All Iraq has to do is tell us to get out, and we would get out.
Oh, please. The supermajority of the people in Iraq have been demanding America leave for years now. If you
give
had them all to listen, you'd have just heard over the last hour it explained that America is backing the Iran factions in Iraq because they're the only ones who want us to stay. And we are backing the Iran factions against every other Sunni and Shiite and Kurdish faction who are trying to come together to create a coalition government.
That's what
and we won't let them do that because that coalition government wants us to leave. So we're backing the Iranians instead, Richard. You're just full of slogans, but you don't know what you're talking
this is
about,
the same,
man.
This is the same rhetoric crap I heard when I was in Vietnam.
Yeah, well, and they were right about Vietnam, too.
Yeah,
you might remember
several
we lost 60,000 guys
that's
and
why
lost
we
that
had a,
war
we
anyway,
left because
Richard.
The liberals wanted us out, and we
right.
and, over millions of people
it was the liberals
in Laos
got us
in Cambodia and Vietnam died.
It was the liberals who got us into Vietnam. 60,000 Americans and 3 million Vietnamese died for nothing, pal. And I did not insult the soldiers. I did not call the soldiers imperialists.
You don't recognize
you
don't.
I called the civilians who send them to war imperialists, Richard.
You don't recognize that.
And you have a hearing
problem, you don't recognize that. You
yeah.
don't recognize that. You do insult the military.
Okay, well, I'm so sorry that I hurt your feelings, tough guy. I hope you can get on about your day.
Oh, I always do.
Yeah,
I look
okay.
forward to some of you people on there.
Yeah, yeah, Semper Fi, man.
Yeah, Semper Fi, always.
So there you go, everybody. Support the troops. Send them to a desert to die for nothing. That's right. And if you're opposed to the war and if you want the soldiers back at their bases in America, say Fort Hood or Fort Bragg, sitting on their duff doing nothing and getting paid for it, well, then you're the enemy of the American soldier. You understand that, everybody? You send guys out to go play the IED lottery in aluminum Humvees, and you are the soldier's hero, according to Richard. All right, everybody. You're listening to the Charles Goyette Show on 1100 AM, KFNX News Radio in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm Scott Horton from antiwar.com, filling in. And I'm doing the best I can to make the case against the case for war with Iran. And here's a little something for Richard, the last caller, to mull over. If opposing American empire means betraying the American soldiers, then why is it that Ron Paul, the anti-war Republican, has raised more than 50% of all donations from active duty military to presidential candidates? When you break down the Republicans who receive, which obviously the military leans Republican, you break down the Republicans who received military donations, Ron Paul has 53% of the military donations. John McCain is way behind, more than $10,000 behind in second place, and the rest of the imperialist warmongers way, way behind that. Maybe it's because those soldiers actually do believe that they joined the army to defend their country rather than to be an occupying imperial force in someone else's country. I think it's probably pretty easy when you've been playing the IED lottery in your aluminum Humvee for a couple of tours to get the idea in your head that maybe what you're doing over there isn't so much fighting for Scott Horton's freedom in Austin, Texas, or Richard's freedom in Phoenix, Arizona, but, you know, perhaps it's about something else. And obviously they do realize this. The polls had the military wanted us out of Iraq by the end of last year. 75% of the American soldiers polled in December of 2005 said they wanted the war to end by the end of 06. Well, here we are more than halfway through 07, surging through September, and, of course, it's already been reported that when General Petraeus reports nothing but abject failure on all these so-called benchmarks in September, that Bush is just going to surge even more troops and double down even more. So, and by the way, also, Richard, if you use your Google machine, you'll find that Prime Minister Maliki from the Dawa Party, the Iran faction that's backed by the United States, even he invited the American soldiers to go ahead and pack up their stuff and leave just a week ago. We'll see the end of him before too long. And now I know Dennis, Kelly, and Joe and others are holding on the phone, but before I get to you, I have to bring on the next guest, Justin Raimondo. He's the editorial director of antiwar.com and is the author of Reclaiming the Right, The Lost Legacy of the Conservative Movement. Welcome to the show, boss.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you this morning?
I'm waking up here. No, I'm fine.
All right. Well, listen, I want to ask you, what is a neoconservative? Because, of course, we've all heard tell here and there, and, of course, people who read your articles know that the current foreign policy of the United States government in the Middle East is really the brainchild of this group of neoconservatives. But rather than letting you answer that question, Justin, I wanted to go ahead and let Michael Ledeen, a very important neoconservative leader himself, answer the question, what is a neoconservative? Dave, hit it.
The word was invented by Irving Kristol, right, who said a neoconservative is a liberal who's been mugged by reality. There are many of us, Richard Perle being the greatest example, and I think basically we still think of ourselves as Scoop Jackson Democrats. Right, why are people who advocate revolution called conservative? Right. I don't know. Beats me.
And that's a clip from Michael Ledeen from the new movie World War IV. Why are revolutionaries called conservative? I don't know. Beats me, he says. So tell me, Justin, in your own words, answer me this. Is a neoconservative just a radical leftist Republican?
Radical leftist Republican. Yeah, well, I mean, basically, they're red on the inside and red, white, and blue on the outside. I mean, that's basically how it goes.
I mean, he just said he doesn't even really repudiate his leftist origins. He says, Pearl and I and others, we still think of ourselves as Democrats.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, look who basically fought the Vietnam War. It was Lyndon Baines Johnson, a Democrat. So, you know, that's the history of a neoconservative movement. I mean, you know, these guys started out as far left-wingers, and then they basically got less radical on domestic politics, but got more radical when it came to foreign policy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, let's invade the world. That's not exactly a conservative idea.
No, it doesn't sound like one. So neoconservative, a new conservative, it's really, it doesn't describe someone who believes in conservatism nowadays, like, say, Sean Hannity or something, but it's really more of a biographical designation of an individual, someone who used to be a radical leftist and then became a right-wing warmonger.
Right, but then, see, you have to understand that, like, you know, some of these guys were never even real leftists, you know, like Ledeen was, but, you know, some of the younger ones, of course, weren't. I mean, they are now just neocons, and, you know, a neocon is somebody who basically cares about foreign policy above everything. That's the most important issue to them, and they take, you know, decidedly non-conservative view when it comes to foreign policy, which is, let's just be as aggressive as we possibly can. The answer to everything is war. I mean, that's basically the, you know, like the neoconservative worldview.
So then the average conservative Republican voter who's pro-war, like, say, Richard, who just called in before the last break, basically then those people are just suckers. They have fallen for a policy advocated by a bunch of former communists.
Right. I mean, you know, I wouldn't attack him specifically since he can't really defend himself. But, yeah, I mean, you know.
He had his say.
Right, right. But, you know, like, these guys are you know, just, yes, you're right. I mean, you know, they've been taken in, basically. And, I mean, that's not conservatism. But, you know, since the 9/11 terrorist attacks, you know, it seems everything has been inverted. You know, liberal means what? What's a liberal now? It's somebody who's for civil liberties, who's against war, who, you know, is for smaller, more limited government. I mean, what's that about?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. That's coming from the author of Reclaiming the American Right.
Right.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
now, Andrew Coburn wrote a great book about Donald Rumsfeld recently, and his definition of a neocon is, he says the neocons are the intersection of the Israel lobby and the military-industrial complex.
There you go. Well, I mean, that's kind of that's actually kind of funny, but it's there's more to it than that, you know.
Well, these guys are very tied. They are very tied to companies like Lockheed and Northrop Grumman and so forth, aren't they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's true. The Israel lobby, yeah. But, I mean, these guys believe in power, pure power. They worship power. Like, they love Abraham Lincoln, for example, not because he freed the slaves, but because he was a decisive person who jailed his political opponents and, you know, fought the Civil War successfully. You know, Churchill, you know, the same thing. You know, here's somebody who, you know, was decisive, who stood alone against public opinion, you know, at times, and, again, who fought a war successfully. So.
And Franklin Roosevelt, too, who, to my understanding, is the bane of all things conservative. Don't conservatives, you know, really regret, looking back in history, and regret the New Deal and the four-term presidency of Franklin Roosevelt, yet these neocons hold him up as a giant hero.
Right, right. Newt Gingrich loves to talk about Franklin Roosevelt and how wonderful he is. And, you know, it's kind of odd to hear that, but, you know, the new conservatives don't really have any principles, you know, like real political principles, except power worship. That's what they believe in. Power.
Mm-hmm. And so now tell me quickly, Justin, what would a conservative foreign policy look like?
Well, a conservative foreign policy would be, first of all, prudent above everything. And, I mean, it's more of a temperamental kind of a thing, but it is, you know, a sort of black and white, cut and dried thing.
Well, would it be fair if they called you an isolationist?
Nah. You know, I mean, that's a smear word, basically. You know, you're an isolationist, you know, means that you're in favor of peace.
You're right. Yeah, so, I think back in the 18th century, they called it independence, right?
Right, and yes, and, you know, they called it going our own way. Look, I'm in favor of trading with people, just not invading their countries. So, you know, I mean, that's not really isolationism. Isolationism is, say, you know, Korea in the 16th century.
Well, you know, Ron Paul, the Republican candidate for president, he says that our choice is between republic or empire, that we can't have both.
Right. Well, you know, and he's right. You know, we either have small, limited government with, you know, limited taxation, or we, you know, have this huge empire on which the sun never sets. So.
Mm-hmm. You know, in Chalmers Johnson's new book, Nemesis, he talks about the parallels between the American Empire and the Roman Empire and the British Empire,
yeah,
and particularly in terms of those empires' relations with their own people back home. And he said that the Romans had a choice between living under their empire and giving it up, and they chose to live under their empire and quickly destroyed themselves.
Yes.
The British, he says, on the other hand, I guess partially because they're an island and have those cliffs of Dover and so forth and are pretty hard to invade, when at the end of World War II, the question was basically blatantly put before the people of Britain that they would either have to live under the same tyranny as the rest of the subjects of the British Empire, or they would have to give it up in order to keep their English liberty. And in that case, as opposed to Rome, the English chose to give up their empire and, you know, keep their freedom on their rainy little island. And so then the question is, if America is on a pretty parallel path to ancient Rome and to the British Empire, the question is, what choice are we going to make? Are we going to go back to the limited constitutional republic that could probably last another 500 years, or are we going to destroy ourselves? That's the question.
Yeah.
And all right, Justin Armando will hang on. After this break, we'll come back and take y'all's phone calls and finish up. I'm Scott Horton from Antiwar.com, filling in for Charles Goyette on KFNX 1100 in Phoenix, Arizona. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Charles Goyette Show. I'm Scott Horton from Antiwar.com, filling in for my friend Charles, the most independent talk show host in America. Last segment here, so let me again give another 100 million thank yous to Dave Lucas, Chet Reynolds, for putting the show together today, and to Charles Goyette for the opportunity to do the show. I appreciate it more than you guys could ever know. Callers, stay on the line. We'll get right to you. I just have a couple more things I got to get off my chest here real quick. Please, everyone, go to antiwar.com today and check out this great speech by James Bovard that he gave at the Future Freedom Foundation conference called Foreign Warring Subverts Freedom at Home. That's what we're talking about here with Justin Armando, republic or empire. It's one or the other. You can't have it both ways. You cannot have it both ways. And now, just to recap very briefly, the show today has been the case against the case for war with Iran. We had Gordon Prather on to debunk the nukes. We had Juan Cole on to debunk the idea that, or the story that Aminajad had said that Iran will wipe Israel off the map, which he did not say. Phil Giraldi came on to discuss the eternal enmity between Al-Qaeda and Iran, despite what you might have read in the New York Sun. And also the threat of American use of nuclear weapons against that country in a preemptive, so-called preventive war. Bob Dreyfus talked about how America is backing the Iran factions in Iraq. Gareth Porter debunked the lies that Iran is responsible for the deaths of American soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan. And also with Gareth Porter, we discussed the stovepipe of this phony intelligence, just like last time, and possible consequences of an American war with Iran. And now Justin Armando, the editorial director of antiwar.com, who's on the phone with me right now, has explained that the neoconservatives who've come up with this crazy policy are a bunch of former communist, radical leftist crazies who became right-wingers, but in fact are not really conservative at all. And so anybody who missed any of this and wants to go back, it'll all be up on the top of the page in the anti-war radio section at antiwar.com sometime tonight, hopefully. Okay, so now let's go ahead real quick. Sorry for neglecting you guys so much. Callers, let's talk to Joe in Phoenix. Joe, got a question for Justin Raimondo?
Yes, I do. First of all, Scott, let me just tell you, great job for covering for Charles.
Thank you.
I love your website. People who don't know about antiwar.com, they ought to go to it. Justin Raimondo is brilliant. I love reading his writings and essays. Justin, are you still there?
I'm here.
Okay, now that I've blown the smoke, can I take a shot at you for a second? Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. I understand what you're talking about on the neocons, but I'm a little bit concerned that you dismiss or you gloss over it lightly the fact of the relationship of the neocons as it relates to AIPAC, the Israeli lobby, and the awesome influence that AIPAC has on our Congress, which is keeping us still in the war, especially in light of intellectual academic essays but like from Mearsheimer and Walt and President Carter coming out talking about what's going on in Palestine. How can we talk about our involvement in the Middle East, our constant warring in the Middle East, and not talk about the awesome influence that Israel and its supporters have on keeping us there?
Okay, thanks very much, Joe. Justin?
Well, you know, it's a good question. You know, I mean, I'm not, you know, downplaying that. What I'm saying is that neoconservatism is an ideology, and that even if Israel didn't, even if Israel didn't exist, you know, we'd still have neoconservatism. So, I mean, these guys believe in power as an end in itself, in war as the path to what they call national greatness. And yeah, Israel plays a very big role. I mean, they see Israel as kind of a modern Sparta, like the Israel lobby plays a very big role, especially in driving us to war with Iran. I mean, there's no two ways about that.
All right. Now, very, very quickly, Dennis in Phoenix. Dennis, are you there?
Excuse me. The whole planet is radioactive already, and I'm just willing to see if the current nuclear power plants in the U.S. as well as Israel, it's already radioactive, but will melt down, and they will use it as an excuse to blame others.
Well, I think it's very possible that really the next bad thing that happens, if it's all plausible, will be blamed on Iran. We seem to be working up to that point. Justin, what do you think?
Yeah, they're going to find evidence that, there's a Hezbollah terrorist network here and they're ready to bomb us and, you know, whatever. Whatever lie these guys have to tell, I'm sure they're up to it.
All right. Thanks very much, Justin Raimondo, editorial director of antiwar.com. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I'm Scott Horton, in for Charles Goyette. Happy vacation, Charles. Talk to you soon.